We're reminded that Charles John Huffham Dickens died on June 9, 1870. Legend assures us that a ragamuffin girl hearing the news in Drury Lane raised her troubled eyes and asked, "Dickens dead? Then will Father Christmas die too?" Her worry inspired Theodore Watts to compose this poetic reply titled, "Dickens Returns on Christmas Day." Dickens is dead. Beneath that grievous cry, London seemed shivering in the summer heat. Strangers took up the tale like friends that meet. "Dickens is dead," said they, and hurried by. Street children stopped their games, they knew not why, but some new night seemed darkening down the street. A girl in rags, staying her way-worn feet, cried, "Dickens dead? Will Father Christmas die? City he loved, take courage on thy way. He loves thee still in all thy joys and fears. Though he whose smiles made bright thine eyes of gray, whose brave sweet voice uttering thy tongueless years made laughters bubble through thy sea of tears, is gone, Dickens returns on Christmas Day." For by the time of his death, Dickens' name had become tightly associated with Christmas on both sides of the Atlantic. Charles Dickens, reviver of old merry spirit, sometimes called Father Christmas himself. The whole thing had started with the chilly reception given the first parts of Martin Chuzzlewit early in 1843. Chuzzlewit, which began its serialization in January 1843, sold so badly and was reviewed so carpingly that for the first time in his career as a novelist, Dickens was set back. Committed to popular success by his nagging need for money and gnawing social conscience, a frustrated ham anyhow, Dickens could not rest on faint praise, much less failure. Well before Chuzzlewit was finished, we're told he, quote, "walked 15 and 20 miles about the black streets of London many and many a night after all sober folk had gone to bed, composing a Christmas carol." The idea for the story is supposed to have come to him as he sat on the platform at a Manchester meeting with Disraeli and other distinguished debaters, and it certainly rose from his convictions that a writer had to keep reaching the widest audience possible in order that edification, education, and reform might take root. What the novelist Thackeray wrote in Fraser's Magazine just a few weeks after publication still holds. "As for the Christmas Carol, or any book of a like nature which the public takes upon itself to criticize, the individual critic had best hold his peace. Who can listen to objections regarding such a book as A Christmas Carol? It seems to me a national benefit, and to every man or woman who reads it, a personal kindness. The last two people I heard speak of it were women. Neither knew the other or the author, and both said, by way of criticism, 'God bless him.' A Scotch philosopher, who nationally does not keep Christmas Day, on reading the book, sent out for a turkey and asked two friends to dine. This is a fact. Many men were known to sit down after perusing it and write off letters to their friends, not about business, but out of their fullness of heart, and to wish old acquaintances a happy Christmas." All that from the Illustrated Book of Christmas Folklore by Tristram Potter Coffin. We've just heard the refrain that Charles Dickens returns on Christmas Day. We know, too, that he returns on the last Sunday of November, as we hear his immortal words at the Wyoming Valley Art League in Wilkes-Barre. It's now a tradition for the Art League to host a reading of every single word of A Christmas Carol, presented by an array of prominent speakers. It's Sunday at the Circle, produced by Robert Anderson and Rose Wright, and each year at this time, the Wyoming Valley Art League salutes its partnership with Ruth's Place, a homeless shelter for women in the Wyoming Valley. Robert Anderson, co-producer of the event, Patricia Lacey, Wyoming Valley board member and reader, and Bonnie Kowaleski, who is a Wyoming Valley art member and an art instructor and coordinator of the Ruth's Place project, paid a visit to the WVIA studios to talk with us about the event. First, the tradition.
Dickens loved to read his own works, but he was timid at first, and he read just bits and pieces of his works to a select group of friends at his home or at someone's salon. But finally, he thought, I'm going to do it. I'm quoting now from my copy of A Christmas Carol. The first public reading of any of his works by Charles Dickens was of A Christmas Carol. An anonymous member of the audience that night later wrote, as the clock struck the appointed hour, which was midnight, a red, jovial face, unrelieved by the heavy mustache which the novelist has since assumed, a broad, high forehead, and a perfectly Micawber-like expanse of shirt collar and front appeared, and a full, sonorous voice rang out the words, Marley was dead to begin with, then paused as if to take in the character of the audience. Dickens went on to have a highly successful career as a reader of his works, a pursuit he especially enjoyed. We here at the Wyoming Valley Art League summon his generous spirit to help us continue that noble tradition he began so many years ago of conducting public readings, in particular of A Christmas Carol. As another member of his very first audience wrote, Hawk of sermons and churches, there never was a more beautiful sermon than this of A Christmas Carol. Sacred names do not necessarily mean sacred things. And I will add to that, the first two annual readings of A Christmas Carol, I believe we had Dickens there, Charles Dickens' ghost, and we are hoping that he will be there again this time.
How do you conceive of the afternoon?
Each year we have had in the range of 15 to 17 readers. I have a list in front of me. I haven't counted them up, but I believe it is 17 this year. Well-known celebrities, some of them not, but all full of the spirit of Dickens. Famous illustrator from NEPA, Ted Michalowski. Not known so much for his stage presence, although we had him the first 2 years as a reader, and he had a wonderful stage presence. And this year, he got a job as an art teacher at the Savannah College of Art in Georgia. So I did not put him on the list. A few days ago, I got an email message from Ted saying, is the reading on again this year? I'm going to be up for the Thanksgiving break, and I would really love to be a part of it again. The Art League has such wonderful people coming to it, and I enjoy it very much. And this year we also have, in addition to our own Patricia Lacey and a few other members of the Art League who are terrific readers, a new reader, Darren Moore, who is a terrific actor and has been in many productions and is also a singer, and Heather Sienkiewicz, the new director of the new Sordoni Gallery, will be making her second appearance. Ron Cross, Art League member and former Broadway actor, will be there again. He's been at every reading. Tony Brooks. I emailed Tony Brooks recently and I said, Tony, by the way, is a Wilkes-Barre City Council member. I said, Tony, it's great to have you back again, but I think I'm going to give you a different part, different section this time. Tony emailed me and said, oh no, I love that section. I saw Tony last night and I said, Tony, you can have it. I'll make the adjustment. I wanted to give him a longer section because he is so good at reading. The first year we had Rabbi Larry Kaplan reading the part where the ghost of Christmas present makes his first appearance. And Rabbi Larry boomed out when Scrooge said, who are you? I am the ghost of Hanukkah present. And the entire audience cracked up. The second year, he couldn't make it. Alicia Nordstrom from Misericordia, a terrific actor and reader, read the part. This year, neither of them could make it. What happened was Darren Moore, right after I recruited him for the reading, emailed me and said, would it be possible for me to get that part where the ghost of Christmas present first appears? I said, Darren, how did you know? Yes, you can have that part. We need you. Larry Voitko will be reading again. He read the first year. He'll be back with us. And he's not the only Voitko. There's also his wife, Bernie, and son, Jonathan, both terrific readers. Jonathan, as everyone in NEPA should know, is also an actor and director. Bernie gets, once again, the part with Fezziwig, the dancing part, which is so appropriate because she is a dancer and, of course, is head of the dance program at Wyoming SEM. Bob Stanley, of course, Art League member. And new this year, Man About Town, George Brown.
The sense that we get as you introduce us to the readers and their various parts is that there is some affinity often between the readers and the text. And I know, Patricia, that you have said you kind of like the dark parts. Tell us about that.
Actually, I really love the dark parts. I love feeling the cold. I love feeling the hunger. I love the darkness, the dankness of it. My role last year has changed somewhat, but I'm going to be kind of in the beginning where the two gentlemen come in and ask for Marley and ask for a donation. And Scrooge, of course, would never, ever donate anything to anyone. He's miserable, he's hateful. And they say, at this festive season of the year, Mr. Scrooge, said the gentleman taking up a pen, it is more than usually desirable that we should make some slight provision for the poor and destitute who suffer greatly at this time. Many thousands are in want of common necessaries. Hundreds of thousands are in want of common comfort, sir. Are there no prisons? Asked Scrooge. Plenty of prisons, said the gentleman, laying down the pen again. And the union workhouses? Demanded Scrooge. Are they still in operation? They are still, returned the gentleman. I wish I could say they were not. The treadmill and the poor law are in still full vigor? Both very busy, sir. Oh, I was afraid from what you said at first that something had occurred to stop them in their useful course, said Scrooge. I'm very glad to hear it. Under the impression that they scarcely furnish cheer of mind or body to the multitude, returned the gentleman, a few of us are endeavoring to raise a fund to buy the poor some meat and drink and means of warmth. We choose this time because it is a time of all others when want is keenly felt and abundance rejoices. What shall I put you down for? Nothing, Scrooge replied. Oh, you wish to remain anonymous? I wish to be left alone, said Scrooge. Since you ask me what I wish for, gentlemen, that is my answer. I don't make merry myself at Christmas, and I cannot afford to make idle people merry. I help to support the establishments I have mentioned. They cost enough, and those who are badly off must go there. But, sir, many can't go there, and many would rather die. If they would rather die, said Scrooge, they had better do it and decrease the surplus population. Besides, excuse me, I don't know that, but you might know it, observed the gentleman. It's not my business, Scrooge returned. It's enough for a man to understand his own business and not to interfere with other people's. Mine occupies me constantly. Good afternoon, gentlemen. Yeah, it's very, very dark, but that was Scrooge before the intervention of the spirits, but that was Scrooge. He was dark, miserable, bitter, and he was a miser.
When you conceive of the arc, then, of the day, you try to give us a rhythm of readers, but we just plow through right from the first words to the closing.
Yes, we do. That's what it is. It's the reading. Every word as Dickens wrote it, and We have no intermission, but we do not put glue on the seats. Now, it does take about three and a half hours, but we have lots to eat and drink, and people can get up, go to the refreshment table. They can go outside. They can leave. They can come back. They can do whatever they want. We ask that they do it quietly. That's all. But we don't expect people to sit there the whole time. We expect them to enjoy the reading and to have a good time.
One of the lovely things about being on radio is that we can concentrate on the voices in your readings that we've just heard. But the fact is that you, Patricia, are decked out in something that you might wear that day.
Actually, I think I might. What I'm wearing is some headgear here. And it's bedazzled and bedecked with lace and glittery stones. And I might put a couple of sprigs of fresh holly in it for the performance. And I think that will make it look pretty authentic.
Several of our readers dress in period costumes. In fact, Darren Moore said to me, "Is it all right if I come in period costume?" And I said, "Yes, of course it's all right. And if the audience feels like coming dressed in that manner,
wouldn't
they
that be
are
grand?
Encouraged to do so." Yes.
One of the things that comes right to mind hearing what you've read for us, Patricia, is the fact that the Art League has many partners in the community, and this event is one that is directly linked to Ruth's Place, a homeless shelter for women in the Wyoming Valley.
Rose and I have been pounding the pavement selling ads for the program, and Patricia too. And this all goes, once again, for art classes at Ruth's Place. These art classes are given by the Art League.
Well, introduce us to Bonnie.
Bonnie Kowaleski is an Art League member and a visual artist herself, and she has been teaching these residents of Ruth's Place. This is her third year.
Yes.
Well, tell us, Bonnie, how did the association between the Art League and Ruth's Place come about?
Well, I was approached by Margie Bryant and Allison that they had a community outreach idea. And we spoke about it, and I was free, and it was interesting. And I thought, why not? We'll try it and see.
Do you go to Ruth's Place?
I do. I go once a week and try to introduce an easy way to give some sort of an art lesson, because you don't always have the same ladies there. You know, you may have them for a few weeks, but then it's all new all the time. So I had to come up with a way to try and introduce art quickly because I didn't want it to be just a craft thing. I wanted to give some substance to it. And it's gone over. We have such a good time. In fact, this past Wednesday, I was there for such a long time because they didn't want me to leave. We just had such a good conversation. You know, but I do try to give them just basic art that will spur them on, their children, their grandchildren. When they have their own place and they're settled, they have their own artwork to be proud of. So it's been really uplifting, and I thoroughly enjoy it. I really do. So it's been a wonderful program, I feel.
And that is part of a community building and
yes.
Also helping with self-esteem issues.
Exactly right. That's what my goal is confidence, self-confidence, because when I start and lay things out, whether it's a still life or pieces of paper that I want them to do something with initially, it's immediate. I can't do that. I can't draw a straight line. And then I always tell them, I can't either. I have rulers. We're fine.
You know?
So my main thing that I always do is how we have primary colors, and that's all we use. And it's a whole color mixing thing that they're doing, not even realizing they're learning what all these other things are that they can pass on. But the confidence factor, that's the fun part. It really is, because then I'll take pictures and I'll show them, and they say I have a magic camera because it doesn't look the same when they're looking at it. But it's just really a positive, really wonderful experience, and I think they really enjoy it.
And is there word of mouth where somebody might be reluctant to come, but somebody who's been in the workshop said, you've got to come?
Yes. In fact, there's a number of ladies that come back. They've left Ruth's Place, but they come back. So that, to me, is positive, and that's a success in that respect. You know, we show everyone's finished product. We try to finish something in that time slot because, again, we may not see them next week. So try to finish something and they would be proud of, and hopefully pick up something.
Will we have some of their artwork at the reading this year?
Definitely. I have them in my car right now.
Fantastic.
I picked them up Wednesday, so we'll be hanging them, and absolutely, they're wonderful.
I think that that's also something that we can say in terms of visual art in this event, is that you and Rose work, Robert, with a graphic designer who provides remarkable images for every event you do at Sunday at the Circle.
Joel Koos. He moved away. He and his wife relocated to Long Island. When Joel left, he said, I still want to do the posters for Sunday at the Circle. So we have this long-distance relationship with him, and he just does wonderful posters. Someday we've got to have a show at the Art League, just Joel Koos posters. Every time, there are no duds, not one dud. People, the members, when they first see his posters, say, oh, he's done it again.
He has the spirit within him.
But also you have music that accompanies the experience.
Once again, we will have Jason Smeltzer playing ghostly music on his ghostly theremin. Now, I know Jason's been at this table several times talking about his music, and it's a show in itself. He plays the theremin. I won't try to explain the theremin right now, but two things about the theremin. One, it is the very first instrument to use electricity, like an electric guitar. The theremin was way before that. Two, it is the only instrument that is played without touching it. Now, how can that be? Well, you must come and see. Jason will be on stage with his theremin providing the music for the reading. We also have Wayne Smith, wonderful, wonderful pianist, jazz, classical. He will be playing holiday favorites as the audience arrives on our own Steinway upright. According to the tuner, it was made, I believe, in 1905, and it is still in great, great shape.
So it's really a feast for the senses, because you feed us, so we have wonderful things to taste, we have wonderful things to hear, we have wonderful things to see.
And hopefully we have wonderful things when we speak that you will feel. That's the part of it, because A Christmas Carol, there is so much to feel. And if you listen to the words, page after page, there's so much to feel. So you'll feel as well.
Patricia Lacey, Wyoming Valley Art League board member and reader. Bonnie Kowaleski, WVAL member and art instructor and coordinator of the Ruth's Place Project. And Robert Anderson, co-producer of this special event. A complete reading of A Christmas Carol, Charles Dickens classic. Sunday at the Circle will present the third annual reading of the classic at the Wyoming Valley Art League in downtown Wilkes-Barre, 130 South Franklin Street, rear. And that's this Sunday, November 26th, at 3 in the afternoon, a special start time, 3 in the afternoon. And for more information on the web, wyomingvalleyartleague.org, wyomingvalleyartleague.org. You may attend for free, but they would welcome anything you would contribute. Parking is free as well. It's for all ages, food and drink provided. Sunday at the Circle, presenting the third annual reading of Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol at the Circle Center for the Arts, part of the Wyoming Valley Art League, and that's 130 South Franklin Street, rear, in downtown Wilkes-Barre. It's this Sunday, November 26th, at 3 in the afternoon. For more information, on the web, wyomingvalleyartleague.org, wyomingvalleyartleague.org.